Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, welcome to the show. Today, we're going to be doing a deep dive. Well, maybe not. We're going to do a superficial dive into our takeaways from this wonderful episode with Paula Pant talking about building a framework for starting to look at real estate, not as a speculative Brad Barrett investment. Sorry, buddy. That one has a lot of legs. Not as the belly flop of financial investments, but as a investment vehicle. And so many people in our community have leveraged or used real estate to reach financial independence, either as their main focus of the strategy or as a significant leg of the tripod, that we wanted to go back to this and really up our own skill sets to keep up so that, you know, we don't just wall off this and just focus on the other side, but rather we can start to embrace really this important investment strategy, you know, as it fits our own lives. To help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing quite well, Jonathan. Yeah, I love how much you're enjoying beating me down here on my... Maybe
it's a two-way street.
Yeah,
no, it's a two-way street.
I do joke at you quite plenty, so I'm not too worried about it, but it's absolutely true. And that's one thing Paula said, appreciation is speculation. I thought that was a beautiful quote and it applies to my life perfectly. And I think it applies as a great framework of real estate investing and maybe investing generally.
And I think what it points to is that both of us realize we don't have it all figured out. We just simply don't. We're trying and we're learning new information. You know, there was a lot of math in this past week's episode. But if you understand that math, if you can practice that equation, those equations that are probably, it's algebra one, right? At its core, man, wouldn't it be cool to have an algebra one class where that's the type of stuff they were teaching? Like at the end of it, all right, that's a sidebar. But you know, you can learn anything and you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out your financial life. A few of these types of equations, being able to go through them quickly and use information like that to analyze deals is a tool set that it's almost hard to put a price on how valuable it is.
Yeah, I agree. And it's more of a mental model, right? It's having this built into how you approach the world. It's not that you're sitting there doing math and in-depth calculations. It's just like Paula has this as it's knowledge in her brain at this point that it just flows. That's the important part. She doesn't have to put great effort into this. It's just she can look at something and know, okay, that's going to be a cap rate of roughly X. It's just there. And she can use it just as this mental model to approach, okay, is this even worth my time looking at this investment? And she probably knows 99% just from looking at a couple of quick numbers, is this worth additional scrutiny? And I think that's a cool way to approach life, just having that background. Jonathan, like you said, personal finance doesn't have to be difficult. I know at this point in my life, it's on autopilot for me. I spend, no joke, at most 10 minutes a month, 10 minutes a month on my personal finance. And that's just because I have to write two checks a month that I can't figure out how to automate.
Why won't they let me do this?
People are going to yell at me. I'm sure there are ways to do this, but that's part of my 10 minutes a month because everything else just works. It flows. I've spent time on it. I have that mental model. I know where I want to allocate my resources and it just happens.
So I just recently moved to a new home. And when you move to a new home, you have to set up all these utilities again. And all of them required a check for that first month. And so I spent an hour. So you talked about 10 minutes. I spent an hour creating the checks for these five or six different vendors in order for my life to operate. And I thought to myself, I remember I've had conversations with people and they're saying, well, yeah, you know, every month it's probably about 10, 12 hours that I take to pay the bills. I was like, what? You know, for the last 5 years, this has just been on autopilot. I've just been done. Now I have to set it up. And with many of these like local utility companies, et cetera, you have to go through their process. You have to put a voided check on a sheet of paper and you have to mail it in or whatever. And then you have to fill out an application process in order to get it back. Oh, I want to get back to my easy days where everything is just, because I did, dude, I had it dialed in. I had zero checks that I was writing for the past 5 years, unless it was just to one off. And now I feel like I've truly embraced the new economy. I just set up a Venmo account. Now, do you have Venmo?
I do not have Venmo.
All right. It's owned by the company that it's PayPal. PayPal owns it. And I don't understand why we need it, because PayPal just lets you send money the same way that Venmo does. But it's social media sharing of money. I guess it makes it fun. When I was setting up my Venmo account, which I've been extremely resistant to, but now I had the third or the fourth person ask me if I had a Venmo account in order to do this kind of peer-to-peer money transaction. They said, can you Venmo it to me? I'm setting up my Venmo account and ask me, all right, now if you want to turn off, you know, if you want, you can go to the settings and you can actually set it so that nobody sees why you're sending money. I'm like, why would that be something I have to opt out of? That doesn't make sense. Why you want to share with everybody your business, your financial business, what you're sending to everybody? Why would that be something that I would want to publicize, like a Facebook notification? But apparently it's a selling point for Venmo that you can advertise why you're sending money to people.
Hmm. That seems very strange to me, but honestly, I have been a little resistant to set up Venmo because of exactly what you said. I have PayPal. Why the heck do I need Venmo? But evidently that's the new way.
And it's the same company. I understand if we're a different company. Yeah. It's the same company.
Yeah. Maybe somebody can write into us and send us a voicemail and say like, all right, guys, you're being a little bit behind the times here.
Can I say this was the first time that I've been like, I'm getting a little bit older. I'm falling behind. I haven't picked up Snapchat and I haven't gotten Venmo and I barely get Instagram. I like legitimately barely get it. And then I hear that there's individuals that have moved on and now they're using apps like all of those, plus like Discord and all these other, and I'm like, whoa, yeah. I think I just hit I hit complacency.
But yeah, one thing you mentioned in there a minute ago, you said that person, you know, this hypothetical person, oh, I spend 8 to 10 hours, I think you said 10 to 12, but I mean, some absurd number of hours per month doing the bills. And I think this actually is another benefit of FI that we don't think about when we list our many benefits is we've talked about not having to worry about cash flow, but really one of the side benefits, why are people spending so much time on their bills? It's because they're worried they don't have enough money in their checking account for when that auto draft would come otherwise. This is a big fear of people. And we've never actually put this into words, but it's true. I've said I have more money in my checking account than I probably should, but it's a comfort point for me personally, because then I never, ever, ever have to worry about cash flow. So if we had a larger credit card bill that month, there's that extra cushion in there. I don't have to think about it. So it's taking that mental worry and just eliminating it, right? But if I was worried about every little bill, the $120 electric bill or something absurd like that, like that's why it takes 10 hours a month, because you have to painstakingly write out every single check for every single bill, hope you have enough money, time it exactly right for when this thing's coming out, that thing's coming in. That to me is, I mean, that's crazy. Whereas for me, it all operates on autopilot. And again, it's just this one or two checks that I have to write a month, which still bothers the heck out of me, frankly, but it's on autopilot. And a lot of that is because of financial independence. I'm in a place where, because I've been going down this path to FI, I simply don't have to worry about cash flow anymore.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that is I remember as a 17, 18 year old that really wanted to learn to be good with money. I really wanted to be good with money. And I just found like the Dave Ramsey community, the Dave Ramsey podcast. And I was starting to hear about the baby steps. And I was starting to hear about the envelope system. Have you heard of the envelope system?
I have. I know nothing about it.
I realize that we've never really talked about it, but I think you're going to laugh at me so much. All right. I can't help it. I was going to not do this, but now I got to do this. So the envelope system is basically that you, and it's probably fair to some varying degree, you as this individual that's massively in credit card debt can't be trusted with credit cards. Fair enough. But the response to that is to never use credit cards, to put it inside of a block of ice. Okay, fine. You put it in a block of ice, cut them up. I get it, all that. But then the solution is that you're going to use envelopes for everything. You're actually going to get envelopes and you're going to put the cash that you want to spend on every item inside these envelopes. And by the way, I just want to let you know that if you need a fancy version of this, at the time, DaveRamsey.com, you can purchase a deluxe leather edition of this envelope holder. So you no longer need a wallet. You can actually have a leather envelope with little envelopes in the middle that hold the cash that you've allocated for your groceries, for your everything.
Sounds fancy. I like it.
It's super fancy. It's deluxe. A little bit extra for the deluxe version, but you can get it. And you'll never need to use credit cards because you'll have cash for everything. I think an extension of that, my solution, because I tried that for like 2 weeks and I was like, well, this is just crazy. This isn't working for me. And maybe it works for somebody, but for someone that craves simplicity, even at this age, I mean, you got to realize this is what I was looking at for. This is what it looks like to be good with money. This was my baseline for what it looks like. All right. I need to be using digital. I need to be using envelopes. So then because I'm starting there, because of my basis, if I want to do better than that, I was like, well, you know what? Maybe I could do digital envelopes. All right. So now what I'll do, instead of me having these physical envelopes that I'm carrying around with me, that have this cash in them, which I carry no cash. I hate carrying cash. So this is just crazy. But instead of doing that, now I'm going to set up 8 bank accounts, eight checking accounts, because I could do checking accounts for free. USAA, I was able to set up checking accounts, $25 minimum, no fees. I mean, there's no real downside. So I originally set up these 8 checking accounts to basically each month, and this worked. I'll say it actually did work. I would take, all right, so if I'm going to allocate $300 or $400 a month for food, I will throw that grocery money into this one account. I'll throw bills into this. And so my 10 minutes would just basically be allocating, you know, the auto transfer or the transfer of that money into one of those accounts. And I would spend out of that respective card. And I just followed a budget. I'm using YNAB now. And I realized that you just don't need to do that. So YNAB can do all of the heavy lifting for you, and you have the money allocated in these various accounts for the purpose that they're intended. Like, I can look at my YNAB account, and yes, I have a balance, but even more than a specific amount that I have in a checking account, I have a goal for that money, right? So like, the money that's actually in that account represents maybe the next month's or 2 months worth of food and savings and everything. And so basically, instead of having to have 8 checking accounts that I'm managing, where, and this is the worst part of that plan, the bank company every 12 months was sending me, you know, brand new debit cards for all of these, right? So I was getting 8 to 12 debit cards every 12 to 24 months. I still have like 36 debit cards that I need to shred because they're just in a bin. You can see how it goes south. And so slowly I've been letting those accounts die off. And now I just have, but basically at the end of the day, now I have one checking account with enough money in there for 1 to 2 months worth of spending. And YNAB has already assigned that out. I have my credit card that I do all my spending on. So I'm still getting points for all of that, et cetera. And my cash flow is just set up so it pays off the balance in full at the end of the statement. YNAB's already allocated the money, so my budget is being kept. And on top of that, I don't have any debit cards flooding my house anymore. You know, if you get charged for each account that you have open, if you don't do a certain number, all that's to the side. And then for my savings account, Ed introduced us to this CIT savings account that actually gives you, give me the exact quote, the interest is important here. It's a high interest savings account. And as of August 21st, when we're recording this, it was a 2.3% interest rate. Now, this was the final flaw in my plan, is that while I was doing a great job, I don't expect to make significant interest on my checking account. My savings account at USA was getting an atrocious, like, 0.2%, something ridiculous. I think on a pretty significant emergency fund that was there, I was making, I don't know, I don't even want to do the math on it. And I just was complacent because it was just there. And I never really looked for anything else. Well, Ed showed me that, one, you can either, if you're putting at least $100 a month into this savings account, you're guaranteed that interest rate. Or if you have, I believe it's $25,000 in this account, then you get it. You don't have to do any, you don't have to make any additional deposits. You're going to lock in that thing. So now this is my portfolio. This is my simple plan. So I have CIT Bank for my savings account. I have my USA checking account. I have YNAB to handle all of those. And then I use M1 for my investment vehicles. And so this is kind of how I manage my financial life. And this is what my now simple version looks like. Whereas that early version, my 17, 18 year old self was just carrying around 12 envelopes and thinking that made me good with money. What are your thoughts on the envelope system?
I cannot fathom that people walk around with envelopes of cash. I mean, that seems crazy to me. Like, so these are people who have virtually no net worth or negative net worth, and all the money they have in the world are sitting in envelopes, like, on their person.
I mean, that was true for me. I can't comment for anybody else.
But. Oh my God. Wow. That seems, yeah, I'm really maybe speechless. That's astounding to me. But I mean, you've iterated, right? Like, to your great credit. Okay. Maybe there is value for many people, jokes aside here, there's value for many people in the envelope system, but you took that a digital step forward and made that envelope system online. And I suspect while you had to be flooded with debit cards and who knows how much time it took you to set that up, hopefully it was easy on USAA, but...
Yeah, can you imagine being a customer service rep for USA? Really? This dude's setting up another checking account. He's got $50 in there. Why does he need eight?
But I mean, it worked for you, right? So I like that. I mean, to me, that's a lot more secure, certainly, than walking around with all your money in the world on your person. That makes a lot of sense. Now, obviously, today, you're a much wiser person and you have a system that works for you and it works on autopilot. And I think something, even just something simple you mentioned in there that a lot of people don't realize, you auto pay your credit cards. There's, at least on every credit card that I've ever opened, there's an auto pay option for entire balance. And you set it up on the day of the payments due, or you can usually actually pick the day of the month if that makes your life a little easier, and just set it up. So you never have to worry about, oh, am I going to get a late payment fee? Am I going to have to pay interest this month? One of my guiding lights for personal finance, and I don't mention this all that often because I don't think about it on this level, but if you're paying fees for anything, something has gone horribly awry. I pay $0 in fees on anything other than something that's very intentional, right? So like there might be a credit card or two that I've very intentionally and purposefully decided there is enough value in this for me to warrant paying the fee. But you can be damn sure that I am not just getting hit by some errant fee every month because I'm unaware. I think that's one of the parts of financial independence that we all need to just have our eyes open, be intentional, right? So like, again, I'm paying fees on a couple of credit cards out of a place of intentionality, but there's no chance that I'm getting just surprised by some fee or some interest because I was stupid, frankly. Listen, I'm being a little bit forceful
here. I feel like there's a soapbox here.
Yeah, no, there's a soapbox. And part of this is tongue-in-cheek. I don't mean to imply stupidity, but like you get hit by a fee.
Maybe dopiness.
Yeah, dopiness. That's probably better. But most of the time, you can get the fee reversed, right? A lot of people don't realize you call up and just say, look, I'm a great customer. I have X length of time with you guys. This was just a mistake. They're going to reverse that fee, in my experience, 90%+ of the time. Probably closer to 100. I can't think of any time that's ever failed for me. But 90%+ of the time, I would say they're going to reverse that fee. Because honestly, they want you as a customer. They don't want you unhappy.
Most of these fees are assuming that you won't call. The customer service reps have been given the instructions, if they call, you can reverse that. It's not something you have to argue for. You literally just have to ask for it. And even more than that, if you're going to take the time and the initiative to call, that's the hard part, right? So once you're doing that, implement a solution with the agent to make sure it doesn't happen, which could be, why did this fee happen? What can I do to avoid fees in the future? Which could be as simple as, if this is an overdraft fee, well, first of all, don't do that. Second of all, you can have a backup to your bank account that links to your savings account. So if you miscalculated something because you have lower cash flow in your checking account, but you've got a savings account with the same company, most banks at this point have the ability to draw the extra amount from a savings account. If this is a situation like Wells Fargo, can I just say Wells Fargo has more fees? Brad, you love Wells Fargo. I'm okay with Wells Fargo. They have more fees that you have to navigate than any other bank in human history. I had to call them, like on one of their checking accounts, they have this... You have this minimum balance of like $1,500. If you go below a $1,500 threshold on this account, they'll hit you on some fee at some level. Doesn't matter. I had to call them. And when I did, I called them and I found out, so what exactly, why was there a $5 charge on this account this month? And they were telling me they dropped below the $1,500 at this particular day and time. And so just, I was able to work out a solution with them where that would never happen again by doing that. If you're going to take the time and the initiative to call a company, find out what the game is and make sure that you're not paying. Your life doesn't need to be more expensive. What we're doing here, every single time that you take action on these ideas, you're looking for ways to just simplify some aspect of your life so you can set it and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. So like, you know, we were talking about how much time do you spend on your financial life? You don't spend time making credit card payments. You spend on your credit card. At the end of the month, the credit card is paid off. I think some people like just fundamentally don't understand how credit cards work and assume that just because you use a credit card, you're paying 18% interest or 24% interest. And they're like, well, you can't use credit cards. Credit cards are too expensive. Brad, that's just simply not how they work.
No, I mean, not certainly in my case. I have not paid $1 in interest or fees at all to any credit card that I've ever used. And I put all of my life spending on a credit card for my...
How is that possible? Right.
You just pay it on time and in full every single month, and it costs you nothing. It's a wonderful financial tool. So used properly, a credit card is an amazing financial tool. Used improperly, it can destroy your financial life, right?
So that's a soundbite right there.
I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. So what do? You try to get your brain out of it. Set it up on autopay, like we've discussed three times already. Just set it up on autopay. Have enough money in checking accounts so you don't have to worry, oh no, is that credit card payment coming out on the 12th or the 14th? I might not have enough money. No, just have enough money. It's real simple. Then everything happens on autopilot, and it really works wonderfully. And Jonathan, I heard probably tens of thousands of people losing a lot of respect for me there saying, when you said you love Wells Fargo. So I need to clarify.
You do like Wells Fargo.
I love my branch. They are wonderful. The people, I go in a couple times a year.
It's like that scene from Mary Poppins, dude. You like take your kids into the bank. It's like, it's a celebration.
Well, no, they do. They treat us very well. And they love, I mean, it's cool when you see kids walking in with all their savings for that year. They treat them like royalty. So
you love your Wells Fargo branch over on John Rolfe Parkway.
Thank you. That is very, very true. Thank you.
So anyway, so Wells Fargo Corporate, you know you have some public image work to work on, but you can give some kudos to your local branch. Yeah. They're making you look good. Wells Fargo, they actually did do a public apology. So, you know, like they are aware of this. There was actually a Facebook ad saying, we know we let you down and we're going to do better. We know that we probably shouldn't have paid incentives for people to fake open accounts all over the country. That probably wasn't our best look. But 2019, we're going to do better.
Oh, boy.
You know, what we should actually take a second to talk about, Brad, is actually on this podcast, you know, how Choose FI, how we make money. What is our form of monetization? There, you know, with hundreds of thousands of listeners, people ask us, I love that your show doesn't have any advertisements, but how, and I don't want you guys to go away. Is there a way that I can support you guys? What can I do? Because I want you to be able to stay, keep doing this, keep offering this type of content, which we very much appreciate. The follow-up question is, how do you guys make money? So what we did, we made a decision early on that for the listener experience, like Brad, I think we should say first and foremost that you are a podcast host, but long before you are a podcast host, you are a podcast listener. And looking at it from a listener perspective, your guiding light was, is there any way that we can do this show without bringing on advertisements? Just because for you personally, and I guess I should let you give your own version of this, like it ruins your personal listening experience.
Yeah. And I mean, I certainly understand why many or most podcasters do have ads on the podcast. So it's not looking down on anyone. It's just, personally, if I had my perfect world scenario for Choose FI, we would not have advertisements on the show.
Cool.
So just plain and simple. But that said, obviously there are other ways to make money from a podcast and a website. And I think we realized early on that it was always going to be about win-win scenarios for us. This was the only way that we would feel comfortable. And obviously there are many products out there, tens of thousands of products that we could theoretically hawk. And that's just not us.
Glucosamine, right? Supplements for your joints, beeswax, blinds, underpants.
What? Yes. Do not expect any of those things on Choose a Vibe. But there are certain...
Royal bee pollen.
Oh, jeez.
No, sorry. Yeah.
He's never going to stop.
Can I do like a fake ad like once a month or something like that? I just feel like I'd do a really good ad read. Royal bees pollen, energy like you've never felt before in a pint-sized vial. Produced fresh in a country of an unknown origin directly to your home. Plus shipping, $4.99.
This is the second reason we don't do ads on the podcast. But that said, there are a couple of products that Jonathan and I use in our own personal lives. Obviously, we've talked about credit cards. We have a credit card affiliate program. We just mentioned in passing M1 Finance and CIT Bank. There are affiliate programs for those. So, of course, we're going to mention them. If you wanted to sign up for either of those, it's real simple. It's just choosefi.com/M1 or /CIT. You're going to get at least the best public available offer whenever we have an affiliate program. So there's no possible downside. It's just very simply just clicking through that link or just typing that into your internet browser, and that supports the show. And that's really all we ask.
And I think, Brad, if you like think about what the framework for that looks like, our guiding light is how can we help our audience Earn more, spend less, enjoy the journey. If you hear us represent or promote something on this podcast, it is because we feel like personally it has benefited our lives, it's been helpful for us, and we think it will help you with one of those tenets of our, effectively our mission statement, right? To help our audience earn more, spend less, enjoy the journey. Everything that we just mentioned on the segment, I think, does that. Everything that we mention in the future will fall under those categories as well. So it's that simple. You don't need to overcomplicate it, but I hope that our audience can appreciate by doing what we do in this way, it removes so much bias from other aspects. So many conflicts of interest that you see in the financial space, we're able to kind of be over here. You support us through our affiliate programs, and we're able to kind of just basically give you our opinions on things, which, you know, they're not always perfect, but darn, do we try. So Brad, I had this stated goal this year of reading 10 books. So far, I am working on book number 4. With it being August, I feel
I know. Wait, is this total books or personal finance books or what are we talking?
Total books, yeah. I mean, I certainly read a book to my son every single night. And actually, I would even go so far as to say that I have listened to a fair number of audiobooks, but I'm not counting those. I'm talking about physical written books, reading 4 books this year. Yeah, that number sounds really
low.
Doesn't sound very impressive. I'm not impressing anybody with my book reading skills, but maybe the actual books that I've read will impress people. But I wanted to say, I thought I'd be farther along, and I would be saying that I'd be working on book number 5 right now, except one of the books that I wanted to read it so much that I bought it, was James Clear, Atomic Habits.
Oh, no.
You know where this is going.
I'm getting in trouble here.
Yep. All right. So James Clear released a new book, Atomic Habits, talking about how you can, well, actually, I would like to tell you what it's about, but I don't know yet. I think it's going to be about how you can force, you know, use habits and use mindset as a forcing function for driving your life in a better direction. And I bought this book specifically because there's some books that you just want to tear them apart. You just want to mark them up. You want to make notes in the pages. You want to go back for reference. You want to do more to it than you can safely do with a library book. And that's what I wanted to do with this one. So I had it purchased. It was sitting on my shelf and I was still in the middle of the other book that I was working on. And then you walked in my house, you saw the book and you said, "Oh, wow, I really have been wanting to read that. Can I borrow it?" And as a good friend, I was like, "Sure, of course." And I didn't tell you that I was planning on picking it up to read 2 weeks from now. I just said, "Sure, of course." But 60 days later, I haven't gotten it back yet. Yep. And I'm just curious. I thought maybe you'd come back from vacation with the 20 days that you had off and you'd hand me this book back. First thing you do when you see me, say, "Jonathan, thanks for giving it to me." But you didn't bring it up. So I'm bringing it up on the show. What's the deal, man?
Thanks. All right. I'm in trouble. So can I blame it on Laura?
Yes. Yes.
Now, in all honesty, I devoured the book. I read it within the first couple of days of you giving it to me. I think it was the single best book I've read on habits, and I've read pretty much all of them. And I loved it so much. I'm like, "Laura, you have to read this." And I'm constantly saying that to Laura, and she doesn't read anything I suggest. But this one, she could just hear it in my voice. I'm like, "You will love this." And I think she finished it, and maybe I just didn't give it back to you, but okay. Either that or she's like 80% of the way through. But
ask her directly on the podcast. So, Laura, right. If you're done with it, if you're not, can you finish it? If you are done with it, can I get it back?
So, right. This is coming out August 30th. So at the latest, you'll have it back August 31st.
Now, I admit that my reading patterns are not super impressive. So I've read Mindset. I read, I'm just going to name a couple. I've read a few more than that, but just for the purposes of my own internal growth, I read Mindset by Carol Dweck. I read Quit Like a Millionaire by Bryson Christie. I read Reset by David Sawyer. A few of those we've talked to them on the podcast. There's one more, which I'm dropping right now, but then this was going to be my fifth book. I'm curious for you, because I know you read and listen to a lot more podcasts than I do. From a cadence of life perspective, dad, 2 kids, multiple small businesses plus Choose FI that are taking up so much time, like how do you fit as much content consumption into that as you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it ties to the type of media that you're bringing in. For instance, podcasts, and I've actually started recently listening to audiobooks, though it's a little bit slower going for me at this point, but I've started on David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me. And I read the book, and then I heard the audiobook was the single best audiobook ever produced, somewhat hyperbole, but that is what I heard from multiple people. And I've started now trying to take in that time where otherwise I wouldn't be reading. To read, you need to sit down, you need to pay some attention, and you need to be in probably not on the move, let's say, right? You're not going to drive a car and read a book, or at least, you know, I hope you can't do that safely.
Is there somebody that does that? Like, they stop light. All right, I'm trying to get two pages in. This is a long light. Three I got this. Sentences.
But, you know, I think for me, reading an actual physical book, it's just such a relaxing thing. It goes back to my childhood. I always saw my grandmother actually had a library with thousands, Jonathan, thousands upon thousands of books, probably tens of thousands, literally, in her house.
And did you just say tens of thousands?
Yeah. I mean, no joke. It was an entire room with all four walls filled floor to ceiling with books. It was just this amazing thing. And from the time I was 3 years old, I saw this. And my mom was constantly reading books. So it's been a part of the fabric of my life. And I think it's just something that relaxes me. And honestly, I saw on my trip to Hawaii that if left to my own devices, what I would do with my free time is read. If I were slightly more retired, let's say, how I would fill my time is reading. And what's interesting, actually, I haven't actually purchased a book in probably years until this very month, which is kind of wild that you mentioned buying James Clear's book because you wanted to kind of mark it up and take notes. I actually bought two books that I'm rereading. They're two of my favorite books of all time. They're the book called The Name of the Wind, and the second part in the trilogy is The Wise Man's Fear. These fiction, they're fantasy books, let's say, similar to Lord of the Rings in their scope, by Patrick Rothfuss. And I truly, genuinely love these books. They're Stephen on our team, I got him reading them, and he's like, how did you read those in a three-week vacation? There, I mean, it's 2,000 pages.
They don't even describe them as books. They use the word tomes.
Yeah, for real. They're 2,000 pages. But, you know, honestly, that is what I want to do with my time. And I would wake up early, see the Hawaii sunrise, and sit there with my book, sit there out on the patio, which they evidently call lanais here in Maui, and just read. It truly is part of the fabric of my life.
That's awesome. Well, I say that to say that we have a book coming out this October, Choosify, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. And what we worked with Chris Mamula to write this. This book basically takes the ideas and the principles that we talked about over the first year of the show and builds a roadmap, a blueprint. Gosh, got to pick the metaphor and stick with it, right? Builds a blueprint so that you can take these ideas and incorporate them in your own life. And in my mind, this is a book that you will want to mark up. You know, this is a book that you're going to pick and choose what you're working on, depending on your stage of life or where you're at. But it's one you're going to want to come back and reference. I'm incredibly excited about how it came out. It is going to be available as a print book and as an audiobook. Chris has finished recording the audiobook. MK, can you go ahead and tell our audience when the release date for this book is?
The release date for the book is October 1st, so you can pre-order it now anywhere that books are sold, and it will be delivered to your e-reader, or it'll be delivered to you in a print format on October 1st. So definitely order it. The audiobook is still in the editing phase, so we're really excited to get that out as well, since we know podcast listeners also love audiobooks.
Yes, absolutely. And I will say that, you know, if you are... You know, if you're not a book buyer, maybe consider buying it for someone that you know they would actually read the book. They won't listen to a podcast, but they'll read the book. Maybe this would be a great gift that you could give to them. Or just go request it from your library. You never buy books. You don't want to start now, and you certainly don't want to buy this one, but you do want people to have access to the information. You can request it at your library, and that would be another way that you could really help us get this information out there. I mean, it's hard for me to put into words how excited I am about how this book has come together and the information that's... It's very hard on a podcast to get the information out in the linear order that I would desire. It's just not the nature of podcasts. We put the information out there as it comes on our plate and as the whims of fate dictate. But this book is not that. This book has been carefully crafted to provide a linear path to financial independence that, regardless of your stage at life, you can start taking action on ideas that will help you earn more, spend less, or enjoy the journey. It's going to really be a fabulous addition to your personal finance library. And if you personally say, you know what, I've already put the 20 or 40 hours in, I got this, my life's on autopilot, all I need is encouragement at this point, we're here for you on the podcast. Maybe consider getting it for a friend or family member who would, you know, be able to consume this and open up their eyes to this possibility, this life-changing information that is financial independence. You know, Brad, we kind of switched the format a little bit here, as we haven't really talked a whole lot about the episode with Paula. And part of that is her fault, because she just freaking crushed it.
Yeah, she's too good. I'm not sure we can add anything.
I don't know if I can break that down any farther. Have you listened to that episode? It might be the single best episode on introducing real estate as a framework that I've ever heard. We have very intentionally teed up a part two to that episode, which we have already recorded. And in this second part, we are going to be exploring turnkey rental programs as an, you know, alternate to investing just on your own. The, you know, the content that's contained in that episode might actually surprise you. It's a wonderful addition to that first episode that was already recorded. We'll save that for later though. You know, Brad, the one thing that I did stand out to me that I wanted to come back to was actually her taking the time, and it wasn't easy, to walk us through the cap rate. Now, I only say that to say that of all the calculations, the cap rate is arguably the hardest. There were like multiple steps. It wasn't incredibly difficult. You could certainly program it into an Excel sheet, but understanding the why behind that calculation was really what I came away with as being super important. And the reason I wanted to spend time on that is because it was so pertinent to my situation. And the reason that I think is worth repeating is that I think it reflects the situation that so many people in our audience find themselves. You're leaving your home, which, by the way, by the time that this episode is aired, my home will be sold.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll give myself a little pat on the back for that. Pretty excited about it. But anyways, you find yourself, you've been in this home for a while, you think it's a great home, you're leaving, you're saying, well, I already own this home. Should I go ahead and become a de facto landlord by renting it out? Or should I say, you know what, I didn't intend this as a rental property. It's not why I purchased it. The math wasn't there. Should I sell it and actually look for a property that make a great rental? That is a fabulous question. But then finding the information to arm yourself with to make that decision. So on the one side, she was saying, there are pretty hefty transaction costs, you know, 6% plus, which when you're talking about multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, my house was sold for just under $300,000, and there's going to be a 5 or 6% commission on that sale, plus closing costs and additional stuff. That adds up to $15,000, $20,000 pretty quick. So it's pretty expensive to sell a house. But on the other end of that, you didn't purchase this house for the rental property. Like you, the rental income in this neighborhood doesn't meet the 1% rule. It's not like one that you would typically think of as a rental property. In fact, it falls pretty far below that. Those two are potentially in conflict with each other. How do you make that decision? The cap rate, the equation that she walked us through gave us a wonderful way to think about a property that you already own when making that decision. And after she came through that property, we established that my dividend return by owning this house without leverage was around 3%. And then because appreciation on rental, on real estate, that's not a quote unquote hot market, right? Just a regular stable market, which mine is in, usually keeps up with inflation. So you could probably bake in another 2 to 3%. So just by owning that home over additional periods of time, I could basically count that as a 5 or 6% dividend. And so then it was just worth, you know, then you got to weigh in the other factors, but that's an appropriate way to think about a house that you're holding. That was revolutionary for me. And I hadn't had the words to describe that mental mindset. All I knew was, all right, $300,000 house, I probably am only going to get $1,500 a month in rent, maybe $2,000 on the high end. That doesn't keep up with the 1% rule. So it's probably, I should just get rid of it. The cap rule, I mean, that really added some additional flavor and some additional information to that thought process.
Yeah. And I think Paula's quote here of, quote, never rely on financing to justify a mediocre deal, I thought was another one of those aha moments for me, because she's saying that cap rate is basically an unleveraged dividend. Okay. So you just evaluate the asset. That's the key here. We're not looking at, does this make sense if I can get this amazing interest rate on my mortgage or get some other nonsense like this? You're not looking at that. This is as if it were unleveraged. Okay. So you're just evaluating the asset. Does this make sense or does it not? Very simply. And then you make the decision. So this is a buy or not buy, invest, not invest decision based on nothing else other than, does this make sense financially if this was unleveraged? Then once you made that decision, you can determine, all right, do I want to get a mortgage on it? Do I want to pay cash, et cetera? Those are separate considerations, but that's another one of these revolutionary items that Paula mentioned that you and I just would simply not have ever known. And they were aha moments for us.
Yeah. Well, Brad, I mean, you know, we kind of set the episode up. I teased you at the beginning. And I'm still going to keep teasing you. You know, this is the belly flop of real estate investments. You know, that's what you did. Some people do a swan dive. You belly flopped. But you're still here. There's still hope for you. And in fact, over the last couple of months, you actually have gotten one single family rental property. But this time when you did it as an investment vehicle. So I'm just curious, like, where are you at? Where's your mindset when it comes to rental real estate at this point? What do you feel like you still need to get better at? Like, what's next for you?
Yeah, that is a good question, Jonathan. And actually, I didn't even tell you, I bought a second one.
Oh, so you don't hate it entirely.
So I don't hate it entirely. It's, to me, it's still basically what Paula said is the only way to get ahead is to get started. And that's another one of the litany of just brilliant quotes that Paula had in this episode. The only way to get ahead is to get started. And I think I would have just honestly dragged my feet for years. And this was an opportunity to invest in a very low cost single family rental where I'm basically capping my downside. I'm not going to be destroyed financially if this thing ever, if something catastrophic happened, right? Like, which is unlikely because again, to your point and to Paula's point, we're not talking about appreciation. We're not talking about speculation here. It's just fundamentals of, does this make sense on paper as a business? I believe that they do. I'm still, obviously, I'm a little guarded about it because I just don't know enough. And I think that's what I'm looking at this as. All right, I'm not going out and buying my third, fourth, fifth rental real estate property in the next 6 months. Like, that's just not going to happen. But what I'm doing now is, this is a test that I'm running. And it's mostly a test for my own psychology. Honestly, that's the funny part. I genuinely believe the numbers are going to make sense because I looked at them rigorously. How am I going to stand up mentally if something happens, right? If I can't get a renter in there for 6 months, which is unlikely, but it's possible. If the roof caves in or something. I mean, these are things that in my very simple life, Jonathan, you kind of poke fun at me like good-naturedly about this, but like—
Very good-naturedly, Brad. Very good-naturedly.
Yes, very. But I love a simple life. And I think that to me is actually one of the biggest deterrents to being a real estate investor. For me personally, for many people, they think this is simple, but I have,
does it take more than 10 minutes a month?
It does take more than 10 minutes, but you have to think about things, right?
But like, do you enjoy it? Are you, cause that was the other thing. Does the 20 minutes or 30 minutes or hour a month that you're spending on this now, is that enjoyable time or is it kind of laying over your head like, oh, this is complicated?
Yeah, no, maybe complicating my life. And I think that's my own issue, right? Like there are people who genuinely love this kind of thing, but I don't think that's going to be with me forever. I think also it's a challenge to work out a system. That's another thing that I like about my own life is how can I get 1% better? How can I look for ways to make life easier and make it better? And I think this is a very viable investment option that I cannot be scared of anymore. Right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know what's funny is I noticed that you didn't say where this property is. I know for a fact it's not in Richmond. The only reason I say that to say, I'm not going to bust your spot, your secret spot. I'm just kidding. But the only reason I say that to say is that Paula actually mentioned a few cities in passing. One of the ones she mentioned in passing was Huntsville, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And I only say that to say that I thought it was very interesting because James is from Huntsville. James, we interviewed, I think it's episode 93 on the podcast, A Vegan Path to Fi. He and his wife reached financial independence in large part due to rental real estate properties by the age of 29. He did it in Huntsville, Alabama. And I know in that episode or when I was talking to him in person, he was like, man, the real estate here in Huntsville is amazing. I hope nobody finds out about it because the numbers are so good here. I feel like because he's now reached financial independence, I don't need to protect his spot. but like, it was funny to hear Paula out of all the cities and all the states that she could have mentioned, drop Huntsville out. I'll say it one more time. Huntsville, Alabama. Sorry.
James and Emily, you're never buying another one. Sorry, guys.
Oh, man. All right. So think about this. Richmond, Virginia, maybe the numbers work here, but Paula was giving us a framework. She's saying you're not going to be in the A neighborhoods. The numbers aren't going to be quite as attractive. It's a risk reward continuum. You're going to have to probably drop down to the B, maybe the C. Please don't go to the D neighborhoods if you're not an experienced real estate investor. It's not going to be good. By the way, I feel like I asked this, but maybe I need to ask it again. Is there like a Trello where I can see like a grade A, B, C, D? I feel like it's very subjective, right? This is going to be your own personal opinion, but you probably know when you're in one versus another. You can kind of feel it out, but it's that risk reward continuum. The thing about that is if you don't see any opportunities in your area, it doesn't mean that you can't be a real estate investor if you don't move, but rather it means you need to start asking different questions. What does it look like to become a remote landlord, which is effectively what you did. I know that these properties that you found are not in our own zip code. They're out of state, in fact. And so the series of questions that you then ask is, well, how do I get past my fear, my blind spots? How do I actually do this? So I would like to, I'm not going to ambush you with it now, but I'd like to, over the next 6 months or so, start thinking about doing an episode where you actually walk us through the numbers of your current deal and, you know, how that compared. And I also know you've done a few with some turnkey rentals, which is why we've asked her about that. Like you've done some of these Fundrise, Roofstock type things. And I'd like you to compare and contrast the numbers versus the level of fulfillment versus the simplicity, because all these kind of get baked in, which is why there's not, and Paulo was saying, there's not a right or a wrong. There's not a 100% for everybody. It's like, what are your own strengths and inclinations that will kind of, you know, that'll kind of dictate this. So after you've had a chance to kind of assimilate all this information, would you like to kind of give us a walkthrough of your numbers?
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable. And yeah, we have that episode with Paula coming out at the end of September. So I think that'll be a good time.
So we'll do episode 2 with Paula in September. And then maybe towards the end of the year, we'll do an episode with your numbers. How about that?
Yeah,
cool, man. Fun. Awesome. All right. Well, MK, let's go ahead and bring you into this conversation and bring in some feedback from the community. What do you got for us?
Great. Well, it's been a very busy week on our forums. We actually just hit 50,000 followers on the Chooseify Facebook page, our Facebook group. So very exciting. Lots of great wins coming in. The first one comes from Scott. So he paid off $165,000 in student loans.
Wow.
He said, my path to FI is a little unconventional, but I got notice of a huge step along it today. $165,000 in student loans gone, just like that.
Okay. What does just like that mean? tell, do we have more information?
That was what he posted with a nice visual saying, I paid off my student loan. So very excited for Scott. Didn't get more details on his steps, but still a big, exciting win.
Sounds like a Bitcoin story. No, I'm just kidding. Congratulations, Scott. That's huge, man. I mean, having that out of the way, having that, like in my case, our numbers are actually similar. I paid off $168,000 over a period of about 4 years. It was not overnight, but 4 years. And for me, not having that gave me just freedom. I mean, honestly, it removed the headwind, removed the low level stress of taking what maybe in another scenario would have felt risky. It made it feel like an opportunity. I was able to grab at something that like it would have seemed too grandiose. Like you couldn't possibly do this. You couldn't possibly walk away from your pharmacy job, you know, 4 years after graduation to go pursue something in a completely different field that lights you up and fulfills you. You can't do that. You have too much student loan debt. You've got to take the safe route and just chug it out and do the whatever. You don't get a mulligan. You don't get a redo. The first step to being able to do what I'm doing right now is to say, I am not going to be tied to this debt forever. I'm going to make choices to start paying this down and reclaim decades of my life. So it's a big deal. You know, it's a really big deal. Congratulations, Scott.
Somebody asked him how he did it in the comments, and he wrote back that it's an MD-PhD program, which effectively works as a scholarship for medical school. So he did 2 years of medical school, then a PhD degree that took him 5 years, then the last 2 years of medical school. So the first 2 years of tuition and living expenses were charged to him as a student loan that was forgiven when he finished the PhD program last month. Now all he has to do is finish the last 2 years of medical school, and he'll have 2 doctorate degrees debt-free.
Congratulations.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds like a life hack in the making here. Yeah, MK, I think we need to get him on or have Scott send in a voicemail to talk about that. We're always looking for ways to do college better, right? To come up with some type of college hack. I mean, this sounds like the ultimate one, an MD and a PhD for free.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'll definitely reach out to him and see if we can get him on.
So a few weeks ago, we actually talked with Anthony Gary, and we were talking about going to college for profit. And one of the things that he did in that particular episode was he actually called his mortgage company. He was able to get them to accept a one-time settlement amount and drop the PMI. This was so revolutionary. Like, we'd never heard of anybody ever doing this before. We put a petition out to our listeners to say, can you do this? Have you done this? If you have, let us know. And we got an email from Ren. And in this email, Ren was saying, I'm an insider. I work inside the industry. And while I can't comment on that necessarily directly, I can tell you something that would be of value for your listeners. So MK, I think I forwarded that email to you. Did you get that?
Yeah. So I have Ren's message here pulled up. So Ren writes, howdy, on one of your most recent podcasts, you had questions about removing the PMI from your mortgage, and especially if this was a repeatable process. I'm happy to say that this is definitely something that can often be repeated. I have been in the mortgage industry for over a decade now as both a loan officer and later as an underwriter, so the ins and outs of mortgages are something I know well. The first thing you should know is that the mortgage bank or servicer doesn't gain anything extra from a loan that is paying PMI, so there's no incentive for them not to help you remove it. PMI is paid to the particular agency that backs the loan, Fannie, Freddie, HUD, etc., as an insurance premium. First, you need to know the kind of loan you have. If you have an FHA loan that was taken out in 2013 or later, you cannot remove the PMI. You would need to refinance. For conventional loans, Fannie and Freddie sometimes call DU and LP, or for FHA loans taken out before 2013, you need to show the loan to value of your mortgage is now 78% or lower. How can you do this? All you need to do is call the bank you are currently making your mortgage payments to, not necessarily the one that wrote your original loan, then use one of two options. So the first option is if you've had the loan for a while, or if you've put effort into paying down the principal, you can have the lender check the current balance against the value of the property that was used when the loan was written. For a purchase, this will be the lower of the appraised value or the purchase price. For a refinance, this is the appraised value or the automated value used if the appraisal wasn't needed. Then your second option is if you haven't had the loan too long, or you started with a high LTV, but now the property has increased so much in value that you are pretty sure you're below the 78%, there's another option. You can submit an appraisal to the bank showing the current value of the property in order to have the loan to value calculated. That's the LTV, loan to value. Important to note, make sure to talk to your current servicer about this option before you go and purchase an appraisal. Some lenders will only accept appraisals for this purpose from select appraisal management companies. So you want to check that first. The last thing you want to do is pay $307, $300 or $700 for an appraisal that you can't use. So using either of these options, if your loan to value is now 78% or less, you can then petition the lender to remove the PMI. This is a fancy way of just asking them to remove it. The servicer will then send the information to the agency that insures the mortgage to have them approve the removal of PMI. This is pretty much an automated process. So while it takes a few days for this petition, it always gets approved. Boom. No more PMI.
Yeah, that was a great email. Certainly a lot of detail. And yeah, that is the standard path to removing PMI. So if you have a mortgage out there with PMI and you think you're going to pay that for the next 360 months until this mortgage is gone, that is not the case. So normally when you apply for the mortgage, if you have less than a 20% down payment, so your loan to value is 81, 82%, something like that, there's going to be PMI. So when you're actually getting the mortgage, it's that 80%. That's the key number. But to remove the PMI, as Ren said, it's 78%. That's the number you need to keep in mind. And yeah, usually is as simple as realizing either A, my house maybe appreciated some, B, I paid down enough, or C, some combination thereof, which is really most likely the scenario. You get an appraisal and then you just ask your mortgage company, hey guys, it's time to remove the PMI, and it's gone.
So can I clarify though, that for many people, unless you call, it doesn't fall off?
Yeah.
That
is my strong understanding. And they take advantage
of your lack of knowledge, right?
That is my strong understanding. So, and again, based on Ren's email there, that is how it sounds.
Now, I'm sure it's not across the board that every mortgage company does this, but certainly I wouldn't be surprised if many, or maybe even most, assume that most people won't know that and won't call. Who calls? Nobody calls. We call. We call, and we don't pay longer than we have to pay. So very cool, and huge thanks to Ren for adding that flavor, that information to this episode. And what we'll do, MK, there's a lot of detail there. So could we create that as a PDF document and kind of funnel out the most important details and add that to our newsletter in coming weeks, or put it as a vault resource for individuals that are wondering what methods or steps can I take to get my PMI removed?
Absolutely. We can certainly do that. Well, the next thing we have up is a big shout out to Aman and Christina from Our Rich Journey. They reached FI and they were very excited to announce it on the Facebook page. They also announced it on their YouTube channel, and they're going to be coming on the show in a couple months to talk about their journey, but they were able to reach FI on two civil servant incomes. They have an amazing story and they got so much great feedback. They have over 500 comments already.
Did you see how many likes, MK? 4,900 likes.
What? That's amazing.
Just in our Facebook group. That's the most of all time, I believe.
Yeah. So they're definitely setting some records and doing some amazing things. I can't wait to hear their story when they come on the podcast later.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is super cool. I think a lot of it comes down to the picture here. It's like the greatest picture of all time. It's the two of them and their two kids sitting there.
Oh, that
we retired. We are financially independent. And yeah, we'll link this in the show notes for sure.
That's amazing. Yeah, I can't wait to find out more about their story.
Yeah, no, they're amazing. I love their YouTube videos too. So
what is their channel, their YouTube channel? Can we put that in the show notes for today's episode if someone wants to check it out?
Yeah, they're at Our Rich Journey.
Fantastic.
And speaking of great community support, I mean, they got so much great community feedback. So coming in from our local groups and what they're doing to support each other. So Frederick, Maryland is actually going to discuss electric cars and their benefits. And they're going to actually have some of their members in the local group bring their personal cars to do test rides. Whoa. So that is tomorrow, August 31st, Frederick, Maryland local group. I'm really hoping to see some photos of a Tesla because that would be sick.
Brad, you could go up there for a test drive.
Yeah, I really could. Actually, our good friend Kevin from the Richmond local group and has been to Chautauqua and many Camp Fi events, he just bought a Tesla. I saw it on the Facebook.
Well, it's no Colton boy. No, I like it, Kevin. Congratulations.
Coming over for a test drive, Kevin.
All right, MK, we have time for one more.
Well, one final thing is I definitely want to remind everybody, we mentioned last week about the Chooseify Foundation launch kickoff event that's happening at FinCon. This week when we talked with Paula, it was really exciting to continue that conversation with her because she's been so helpful with the foundation. And the event at FinCon, our kickoff party, will be an opportunity for anybody who attends to get to hang out with Brad, Jonathan, and Paula. It's a fundraiser to support the foundation. So it's all going to a great cause, which is spreading financial literacy through K-12 education and military outreach. So if you want more of Brad, Jonathan, and Paula, definitely join us September 6th at FinCon.
Yes, this is something that we're very excited about. This upcoming Monday, we're going to be doing an episode that we're titling Beyond Fi. We're actually getting the opportunity. We're bringing Ed, who I think he was on the show for a Friday roundup talking about travel rewards several months back. We're going to do a full Monday episode, and we're going to be talking about his story. And we're using this as an opportunity to also introduce the foundation, the why of the Chooseify International Foundation, what its purpose is, what its mission is, what is it today? So what sort of projects will it actually be tackling? Spoiler alert, at the heart of it, the goal is to get this information, these concepts and ideas to underserved populations, to military families and through K-12 education. But I mean, we're going to go into detail and really talk about what's actually happened with that. And there's a lot of cool stuff on the plate. So that's coming up this Monday, this kickoff party at FinCon, which you just gave the details for. You can find at chooseify.com/party. That is going to be a fundraiser for this nonprofit. So if you're going to FinCon or if you're in the DC area or in the very close 6-hour radius of DC.
Yeah, you do not have to be attending FinCon. That's really, really important here.
Yeah. Come to this party and be a part of this with us. We love your support. And I think this is just going to be, it's going to be a wonderful time. And more importantly, it's going to be supporting a great cause, one that we've been advocating for really the last 2 years on the show. And this is our best chance to really have an impact. We think that this can really be something, and we'd love for you to join us on this journey. All right, my friends. Well, unfortunately, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. There's three books that we offer. The first is J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth. The second is Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future. And the third book from Vincent Puglisi, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter the drawing, all you need to do is just go to chooseify.com/iTunes. Follow the instructions there. Leave us a short written review. And then send us an email to feedback@chooseify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every 5 written reviews that we get. And we announce the winner on the Friday roundup. MK, how many winners do we have today?
We have 2 winners again today. So the first comes from Michael. So Michael says, I'm hooked. About 5 months ago, a coworker of mine turned me onto this podcast. I started with episode 100 and loved it. However, I didn't listen again for a few months. I was just too busy with work. Sound familiar? About a month ago, I took the plunge and committed to listening more, and I am so glad I did. Brad and Jonathan provide actionable advice in every episode. After just a month of listening, my wife and I opened a Mint account to track our assets and expenses and to create a budget. We opened an index fund account, we started tracking our savings rate, and we talked about finances more than we ever had before. I started listening just in time to hear about the Playing with Fire documentary and was able to catch the Atlanta premiere with my wife and read Scott's book. I've been exposed to so much that I didn't know that I can't wait to catch up on even more episodes. Keep up the great work, guys.
And MK, I think our second review is coming from Kelly.
Correct. So Kelly says, great show. I always thought that personal finance was quite a dull subject and begrudgingly dove into the Chooseify podcast to appease my spouse. Now I'm totally hooked and I'm the one pushing him to actively listen and check out new episodes. Thank you guys for spreading the fire and making it relatable. It's nice to have a weekly refresh to keep me on track.
And to our audience, I don't know if you guys have been aware of this, but for the last 3 or 4 weeks, Every single Friday Roundup has had video every single time. So we would love it. Come join us over here. It's a lot of fun. It adds a little bit of flavor to the show. For those of you that enjoy watching stuff on YouTube, I think this will add value. I think you'll get a kick out of it. To do so, you can find us at choosefi.tv. It'll take you directly to our YouTube channel, or obviously you can just search on YouTube for ChooseFI while you're there. Oh my goodness. While you're there, press that subscribe button. I mean, that is like an amazing way that you can show some support for us, show some love for us over there. And we would really appreciate your support. ChooseFI.tv. Subscribe and like. We'll see you there. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.